you sit in traffic now. But later, there's a nice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When Andre sold his car on finance with Motorway, he got more money. Ooh! He then put that extra money into tickets to follow his team around the country.
Come on, Rex!
Selling on Motorway was completely stress-free, which is more than I can say about being a supporter of Rex!
Sell your car the more money way. We're 84% of sellers sold for more. Motorway. Validated against two independent sources. Visit motorway.co.uk/claims.
Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Galazzo, joined by Peter Flaherty as we approach the end of August and the start of football season. Peter, how excited are you for college football getting rolling?
I'm a Boston College fan, so as is the case every season, I'm heading into it with blind excitement. My expectations are 9-3 or 10-2 until week 3 or week 4 when that's mathematically out the window, but...
Yeah,
Bill O'Brien's building a monster, so I'm excited. Week one in Tallahassee against Florida State is really tough, though. I wish it was like week two. They have Duquesne. I wish week one was Duquesne just to start off 1-0.
Yeah, no, I feel you. So before we got started on this podcast, we're talking a little bit about how the football season was here, which is why I started our baseball prospect show with that. I was basically telling Peter that I had no clue what was happening with UNC's football team. So maybe I'll have to get a bit informed this weekend when I guess they start. So I've clearly been paying no attention to football, much more focused on baseball and the draft. And that's what we're here to talk about today. We're going to talk about some 2024 prospects who are going off in the minors. We're going to talk about some 2023s who are getting promoted recently. The news broke just before we started this podcast that Rhett Lauder was going to make his major league debut, I guess, on the day that you're listening to this podcast. Probably if it's Friday, it sounds like that's when he's going to make his major league debut, which is exciting. Then we'll get into a little bit of 2025 college player talk at the end of the show. It still doesn't feel right to say 2025 draft class. I've said 2024 for so long, and I'm just starting to feel old, basically, is what I've figured out, Peter, because I'm looking at some of these DOBs for some of the players in this class, and we're getting into like 2007, 2008 territory. Ben in our Slack was sharing a roster for an international showcase that was happening, and there were some like 2010-11 birth dates. So I mean, it's age 30 season for me, so I am old officially, I guess, but I'm really starting to feel it at this point.
It's insane. It's like, especially for this year's draft class, like the 07 and 08 birthdays are obscene, especially for me. Like my youngest brother was born in 05, and like he'll always kind of be like the baby of the family, even though he's a freshman in college right now. But like seeing kids that are eligible born in 07 and 08 is nuts. And then the cherry on top was, like you said, that roster. Seeing like 2011 and 2012, like it doesn't even feel like those kids are like real. That sounds insane, but it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, it really is. Okay, let's get into some player talk. Rhett Lauder, like I mentioned, announced that he was making his major league debut. He's had a really strong season, his first full pro season, really his only time in pro ball this year in 2024. Like most pitchers in the draft at this point, he wasn't activated after being selected in 2023. He has gone from high A to double A to making one start in triple A before this decision was announced. So pretty brief time in the minor leagues, all things considered. It's no Paul Skenes track. It's no Nolan Shanwell by any means. But this will make Rhett Lauder already the eighth player from the 2023 draft class to reach the majors. He'll be the seventh first rounder. All those others are Paul Skenes, Dylan Cruz, Wyatt Langford, Jacob Wilson, Nolan Shanwell, and Hurston Waldrip. The eighth player from the 2023 draft class is Jake Bloss. At this point, not a first rounder, but from that draft class, I believe third round from the Astros. So really strong returns already from this 2023 draft class. I mean, we talked a lot about how Rhett Lauder could be a quick mover, just given how advanced he was as a pitcher. It looks like that's been the case. I mean, Rhett Lauder has basically been the pitcher we've expected him to be, I would say, to this point. It's nice to see he's avoided any injuries. That's always a question mark with pitchers. But yeah, any thoughts on like what we've seen from Rhett Lauder in pro ball, the timeline, just general reactions to this news?
I think you kind of summed it up best. He really hasn't missed a beat from Wake Forest. Like, he's flashing all the traits he did in Winston-Salem. Like, it's a really enticing combination of strikes and stuff. He's pitching in the low to mid 90s with his fastball. He's been up to 96, and then trademark advanced feel for both his slider and changeup. Changeup's the better of the two. It's a bona fide plus pitch, but he's throwing the slider more. He's getting whiffs with it. You know, it's above average, teetering on plus. And then, you know, it's the plus strike throwing ability that he's had for really, it feels like forever. So, you know, he kind of has quality three starter as a ceiling written all over him. You know, I think nowadays, especially with the way that pitching is headed, you know, to have such a blend of strikes and also like a, you know, not to use strikes and stuff as a crutch phrase. But, you know, he's kept that up at Wake or since leaving Wake, and you know, it's more or less been pretty dominant in the minor league level. And then the one start with Louisville, six shutout innings with seven Ks, you know, that was enough. And I'm excited to see how he looks and however many starts he makes in September.
Yeah, I am as well. I mean, I think for a lot of the people who kind of lament the fact that there are no true pitchers anymore, everyone just throws hard and is kind of a stuff monster, I think Rhett Lauder will be a nice breath of fresh air for anyone who has that sort of mentality. I think like his feel for mixing and matching and spotting his pitches was always really what stood out to me. I mean, the stuff across the board, I think is strong. I'll be curious to see really how the fastball plays at the major leagues. It looks like he's throwing both a four seam and a two seam, but I mean, he lands it in the zone so often. He establishes the fastball for strikes nearly 70% of the time. The slider is really not too far off that while also having a swinging strike rate of just about 19% on the data that I have, a 34-35% miss rate on that pitch. So I'd expect that to continue being his best bat miss here. But I really always saw the changeup as an amateur is kind of neck and neck with the slider in terms of like quality of secondaries, his feel for the pitch. I liked how he was able to seemingly tunnel those three pitches together from similar slot, hard to pick up out of the hand. And really, the usage of that changeup in college was impressive. I think all three of those in college, I wasn't differentiating a four-seam and a two-seam, but in terms of just fastball usage, slider usage, changeup usage, it was really like a third for each of those pitch types, and he would use the changeup on batters of either hand. It looks like the usage has steered more towards fastball slider in pro ball, but I don't think it's like some microscopic changeup usage by any means. But yeah, no, I'm excited for Rhett Lauder. I really think these top three pitchers we had in that 2023 draft class, Skeens, Lauder, and Chase Dullinger, who I want to talk about a little bit later, have all lived up to or exceeded expectations to this point, and really like continues to feel like the returns for the 2023 draft class as a whole. So I guess congrats to the Reds and Reds fans for seeing their first rounder get promoted. I'll be excited to watch his debut, or at least see the recap of it, if I can't actually sit down and watch the whole game. I was ticked, Peter. I was blacked out of Dylan Cruz's debut, and that was maybe my most anticipated debut since like Bobby Witt Jr. when he debuted in the majors. So I was really frustrated with the blackout rules this week.
Oh, we could do a whole other podcast, maybe a podcast series on the lack of streaming ability across MLB. But no, the early returns, at least on the 23 draft class, are, you know, eight big leaguers is pretty special. And, you know, in Omaha, I'll never forget being there for Skeens against Lauder. That's going to be a really, really hard game to top for me, at least being able to see in person across all levels. So,
yeah, I didn't even think about that matchup potentially being replicated for years in the NL Central. But that's awesome, because that matchup, I think, was one of the best ones we saw in college baseball. And I remember that being like a very, like the baseball world really tuned into that College World Series to a larger degree than I can remember. That was a phenomenal College World Series just for a lot of eyeballs on the sport. Like a lot of people that I see talking about Major League Baseball who are just focused on covering the major leagues or analyzing the majors, I remember them getting really into all these prospects, Skeens, Lauder, Wyatt Langford, Cruz at the time. And it was just really fun. And I had forgotten about that matchup, but that was tremendous. The fact that you were able to see that one live is awesome.
Oh, I lucky beyond. It was incredible. It was like the baseball version of like Rocky versus Apollo Creed in Rocky 2. Like it was incredible. And then the, you know, went to 11 innings and Tommy White hit the 2-run home run to walk it off. But no, it was really, really cool. And it is, you brought up a great point that they're now interdivision rivals. So I think that it's going to be a pretty common matchup going forward.
Yeah, hopefully so. That would be great. I just pulled it up really quickly because I was curious to see how the 2022 draft class had done in terms of just converting major leaguers. There are only, I say only, there are 22 players from that draft who have become big leaguers already with a full year. How many first rounders would you guess from 2022 have already made the majors? Because I'll give you a hint, the 23 draft class has already exceeded them in terms of first round big leaguers.
Okay, so it's 7 first rounders in the...
Yeah, if you're including Rhett Lauder, he's a 7th first rounder. How many would you say from 2022, which was the Jackson Holliday draft?
I was going to say Jackson Holliday and Brooks Lee are two.
Those are your first two. One, number 1 overall, number 8 overall.
Neto, I know, was Neto was the first to get called up position-wise,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, just always go to the Angels. And Christian Moore in like a few months into 2025 will probably join this list for 24. But yeah, Neto, you got one more college player in the middle of the first round.
Was he a recent call up?
I don't believe so. I think he's been in the bigs. Let me just double check, see when he came up. I think he was up early this year. I guess it's more recent than I'm. Yeah, it is. It is a bit recent.
Trey Sweeney was 21, wasn't he? Or 20? He may have been COVID draft.
Yeah.
No shot. That's Trey. Was it Jace Young?
Jace Young. Yep. That is him. 12. He only has 10 games. It's a lot fewer than maybe I was like in my head mixing him up with his brother, but, those are the 4 from 2022, comparing that to the 2023 draft. It's
I'll take the 23 guys, but that's a solid crop.
Yeah, no, it is. It's solid, but yeah, 23 is just exceptional. It's really, really good. But let's move on to a player from 24 who's actually done pretty well recently. I don't think we talked about him last week when we were talking about kind of early impressions of 24 players making their debuts this summer. But he really went on a heater last week. He led our hot sheet this week on the website. That's Cam Smith, Cubs first rounder, picked right in the middle of the first round. Last week he homered in all 6 of his games against Charleston. He hit over 500 for the week. He's now tied with Christian Moore for the most home runs of 2024 draftees. He has been phenomenal. Overall, he's hitting 319, 411, 787. Let me see, walks to strikeouts. He struck out 12 times, walked 8 times. So he's been really good. The first thing I did when I saw he was going off was just go pull up some video to see like mechanically what he was looking like. I think I'd be surprised if any team was already tinkering with player mechanics in any direction, hitting or pitching. He looks the same in terms of setup that he used at Florida State, but I wondered that because he's hitting for power with wood in pro ball, which is nice to see. And I had talked to some scouts who wondered like what his mechanics were going to look like moving forward. I know there were some scouts who wondered if he would be able to leverage all of his raw power in games with this more grounded and spread out stance that he employed. And I think you can speak to this a lot, Peter, because you saw it firsthand, kind of the evolution of Cam Smith as a hitter his freshman year at FSU. And we talked about, if you guys are longtime listeners of the draft podcast, I think we talked about this a decent amount last year. But really, he was a lot more upright. There were big question marks with swing and miss contact. I think pitch selection in general, but he showed a ton of power. And then he goes to the Cape Cod League, really shows a different setup, getting more grounded, showing a more intentional ability to use the opposite field, made a lot more contact. The swing decisions were better. And I just talked to some scouts who like appreciated those developments, but wondered if he would need to get a little bit more uphill, kind of a blend in between both those approaches. But he's still pretty spread and squatted down. And the fact that he's getting to power is cool to see. If he can get the best of both worlds, power with that added contact and better swing decisions, you got a really exciting player.
Yeah, and that run, I think it literally started the day we recorded, or like the day after we recorded. He went on an obscene run where he 6 straight games with a homer and rightfully earned a promotion, but at least mechanically, like the only notable tweak I see is like he's a little bit more in his lower half and he's lowered the hands a little bit, I think, since getting a pro ball, which has been a really positive adjustment. And I think offensively, he's going to be a power over hit guy. It's just a matter of how, you know, how polished and shored up is that hit tool going to be. He's feasting on heaters right now. I don't know why anyone would throw him a fastball, at least at this point. But I still kind of wonder about, you know, the contact ability against secondaries and especially breaking balls. I think that's kind of the one area in which he struggled, in one area, even in low A or single A, where opposing pitchers were able to pick him apart. But the swing decisions have been pretty mature. And I think if the hit tool can even end up as, you know, average or a tick above average, I think it's going to be more closer to average than above. But you're looking at a really productive player, I think. And the power is really, really impressive. And I'm happy he's gotten he's been able to show that with Wood. I saw it on a much smaller stage, at least for an average baseball fan, last summer on the Cape. But, you know, to see him do it in pro ball has been nice. And it's legit, like, gap to gap juice. Like, it's not just, you know, plus to the pull side and then he can't really drive the ball to right center. Like, he can hammer the ball to all fields, and he's already shown that. I think he had two or three to the backside in that in that 6-game stretch that he was on. But again, the arm plays over at third. If he can just get a little more rangy, a little more light on his feet, I think he'll be even more of a slam dunk to stick at the position. But a lot to like so far. I was a fan of the pick at the time, and I'm an even bigger fan now. So, you know, big league body, bat speed is tremendous, and I think he, along with Christian Moore and Nick Kurtz, has had one of the better runs of any 2024 draftee. It's going to be hard to top 6 straight games with a homer. Like, that's obscene. But
yeah, that's like a Nick Kurtz at Wake Forest.
Yeah, that's Nick Kurtz against like Presbyterian and then a midweek against Winthrop. But no, he's been excellent.
Yeah, and you mentioned just the ability to use the right center gap with authority. If you look at just the batted ball splits and his minor league data on Fangraphs, he's pulling the ball 24. This is low A stats, so the majority of his games have come there, I believe. Just double checking. Yeah, he just has one game right now with South Bend, but it's a 24% pull rate, a 37-38% cent, they say center, basically up the middle, and then 37-38% oppo rate. That's actually one of the numbers I'll be curious to track, like, over a full season. I'm not sure exactly when those batted ball numbers stabilize. I can't imagine it's any time very quickly. It seems like you need a lot of ABs and plate appearances and balls in play for that to stabilize. But yeah, I think just my question with him would be, how often is he going to get the ball in the air and to the pull side to take advantage of that power if he needs to? Maybe he's one of those guys that can just use the entire field for power, and it won't be too much of an issue. It's not like he needs to really sell out to access power. He has so much of it. And then defensively, I think I was probably always a bit more bearish on him defensively. I do have some questions about just the hands and the footwork. There's no doubt he has the arm for the position, so I'd like to see him just refine some things there and stick at the position, because I don't know. I mean, I think he can move off and play other places on the field and be solid, but certainly I would be really excited about his bat profiling as a third baseman. I don't think there's any real risk for him to move anytime soon, but I guess I'm just kind of curious about, like, what is ultimately going to be the quality of his defense there.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's kind of the only, I guess, concern I have. And then also just the progression of the hit tool. But right now it doesn't look like anything too glaring. But yeah, defensively, I'm just worried if there's an eventual move to the right side. But again, as time goes on, the bat could be more than enough to compensate for a potential move to, you know, right field, if they just kind of let the arm play, or heaven forbid, first base. But I think that would be a break in case of emergency type of scenario.
Yeah, hopefully so. I think that's right. All right, well, let's move on to maybe more of a philosophical discussion here, Peter, because I've been thinking about this recently with a number of prospects. It's kind of the idea of, like, post, maybe not post hype in some ways, but like bounce back prospects, when you get fully off the bandwagon for a player. So there have been a number of players who have kind of been doing things, shaking, moving at different levels that have made me think about this. It's Adrian Del Castillo, who was the 67th overall pick by the D-backs in 2021. It's Dylan Cruz, who was just picked second overall last year in 2023. And it's Chase Dolander, who was picked, when was he taken? 9th overall by the Rockies last year. So it's kind of a random assembly of prospects, but I wanted to basically talk through like what I'm thinking of them now and like what the takeaway should be. So essentially for Adrian Del Castillo, I think for years after he was drafted, I guess in 2021, it's only a few years, but basically he entered the draft cycle as our number three prospect overall. It was kind of consensus best hitting prospect on the college side in that class. He had two great years, freshman and sophomore. And then he really had a down year as a junior with Miami. I mean, I can pull up his numbers and go over it, but he did not hit well. He did not hit for power. It was just down across the board. We lowered him on our board throughout the process. He finished as the 25 prospect in the class after starting at three. And I think even like at the time of the draft, as soon as after, one of my thoughts was, man, like I really didn't react enough to his season. I didn't lower him enough. I was probably higher than I should have been on him. And so like my takeaway was that like I don't need to be anchored too much to what players are doing before. I need to be a little bit more reactive to what they're doing in their draft year. And he's quietly had a really strong season, like an excellent season at AAA with Reno in 100 games. He hit 319, 403, 608. He earned a promotion to the major leagues. It's just 13 games so far, but he's still hitting really well, 341, 420, 591. And so for Adrian Del Castillo specifically with me, I think in hindsight, looking back, you could say, oh, you ranked him in a good spot. But I still think process-wise, I probably had him further away from the industry's perception of his talent than I should have at the time. And even if it like looks better for me now, I'm still unsure about the process there. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on a player where you enter a cycle with very strong convictions, a player that has a strong track record of showing you X, and then they show you Y, like how quickly you react to that. So that's one. I'll just kind of lay that all out there for you now, because I know I'm throwing a lot there, but I also have some thoughts with Dolander and Cruz.
Yeah, that's a great question with Adrian Del Castillo. I mean, I remember him way back in 2019 bursting onto the scene as a freshman. I got the stats pulled up now, so I can't recall it. I wouldn't have been able to recall it off the top of my head. But, I mean, he hit over 330 with 34 extra base hits, 12 of which were home runs, walked more than he struck out, 72 RBIs, followed up with a really good summer on the Cape. In the COVID-shortened season, he was well on his way to replicating, if not being more productive than he was as a freshman. I think he hit 360 with two bombs, two doubles in 16 games with 15 RBIs. And then in 21, it just kind of, you know, went by the wayside a little bit. But I think,
yeah, that was a big element too at the time. I was like, oh, the COVID year happened. I'm looking at these numbers that if you're looking at the stat line look really impressive, but it's 16 games. So I was reading too much into a 16 game sample of good performance and not reacting enough to the 54 game sample in 21, which was significantly less impressive. So that was definitely an element of it as well for me, like trying to learn a lesson from that case.
Yeah. And like the power after his true freshman year, it went away and it never really came back until last season in double A with the Amarillo Sod Poodles. And it, I mean, the PCL, it's no secret. It's a hitter's league. Like
both
the ball
Texas
flies.
League and the PCL, you could have said like, oh yeah, he's only hitting all this for all this power because it's really hitter friendly leagues. Yeah.
But the ballparks are boom boxes, but I mean, 36 doubles, 24 bombs, seven, like that's legit. Even in the PCL, like, you know, that's, you can't scoff at that in the slightest. But circling way back to the question that you posed, which is a really interesting one, I think, and something that I kind of, you know, wrestle with when we're going through the draft rankings and evaluating someone, you know, I think you have to trust your eyes and to trust your ability to scout and evaluate. Like, there's a reason why you liked someone in the first place. Why did you like that player, and what has changed so much that has you off of him? And I think with Adrian Del Castillo, I'd love to go back and look, and this is a classic case of hindsight being 2020. Like, he's a big leaguer now, but I'm just looking at 2019 and 2021, like what changed. Like,
yeah,
it's a very vague / blanket statement, but baseball is really, really hard. You know, in 54 games, you know, full season's worth of a sample size, it's a legit sample. But still in the grand scheme of things, it's relatively small. So I think, you know, I think you have to be convicted in your ability to scout guys and in your process in evaluating players, and, you know, not to throw that completely out the window with a bad season. And now a bad season can look a lot different for various players. Like with Del Castillo, I think the contact ability and the hit ability that he flashed as a freshman and really throughout his college career was still there, but the lack of power was a little troubling. And, you know, he proved as a freshman, like, there's power in there. It's like, how do we get back to that without necessarily sacrificing all of this hit tool? As opposed to, like, he's striking out a lot more, like the hit tool is more flash in the pan. There wasn't as much there as we thought, which, like, you can see in some other prospects who kind of, you know, it kind of stinks to say, but, you know, they'll rightfully see their stock plummet. So I think it's like recognizing what, like, a bad season looks like. And if it's like on the back of a baseball card, like with Del Castillo, you know, that could look a lot different than the tools kind of falling off. I know I kind of jumped around to a million spots, but
I thought that was super, super useful, super insightful. I mean, maybe we'll be sitting here talking about Mike Sirota in a similar a few years down the line, because he had a similar trajectory in college in terms of two really strong seasons to start, and then maybe a disappointing one in his draft year. And maybe the Reds will take advantage of that, like the D-backs seemingly have with Del Castillo.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. What she's discovered is that the way that many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that can be wrecking your dog's health. And this is true from even many premium brands. Fortunately, she's found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone could do the same thing to see incredible changes to their dog's health. I've got two dogs, and I want them to be with me for a very long time. There's a lot of good stuff here that made me think about how most dog foods are made, what to avoid for my dogs, and superfoods that are great for them. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/baseball and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's BADLANDSFOOD.com/baseball. I don't know about you, but I love fall. Fall is a time where the weather just feels perfect from the start of the day to the end. It's a great time for me to get on a bike, take a good long ride where it's nice and crisp, not cold, but crisp. And it's time for new fall traditions, like getting regular hydration and energy from Liquid IV. Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers 100 milligrams of natural caffeine plus 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, so you can accomplish all the things you want and need to do. And they've combined their popular peach flavor with the highly requested blackberry to awaken your senses and keep you coming back for more. Liquid IV makes my workouts more enjoyable. It's really easy to prep. I just take my water bottle, fill it with water, some ice, pour in the Liquid IV, stir it up, it's ready to go. It gives me better hydration than I would if I was just using water. It's something that just makes those bike rides even more enjoyable than they were before. Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers energy comparable to 1 to 2 cups of coffee through about 100 milligrams of naturally occurring caffeine. Experience the deliciousness of one of our best-selling flavors, peach, perfectly paired with the highly requested blackberry. It's an all-in-one formula that provides mind and body energy plus hydration that leaves you feeling focused, alert, and ready to take on anything. Tear, pour, live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. Powered by Live Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. 8 essential vitamins and nutrients. Always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Start a new fall tradition with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com.
So the other two I wanted to mention, maybe slightly different for both of them because I have different thoughts on kind of where they're at now and the perceptions of those players. But Chase Dullinger, I was always very high on him, I think more so than Del Castillo. Well, I think actually with both these players, I was slow to change my personal perception of them in the draft year, which I think could be good or bad. I'm not really sure. I really go back and forth on that. But throughout his draft year, we were talking about how he wasn't quite as good as he was as a sophomore with with Tennessee. His 2023 season was just weaker. The command wasn't quite as crisp. The stuff, the consistency of the fastball and slider from start to start wasn't nearly as electric as it was in 2022. He entered the year as a consensus best pitching prospect. And really, even if he replicated his season, I think Paul Skenes would have supplanted him. And he didn't slide too far, but he did slide a little. And I think now he's had nearly a full pro season, 14 starts with high Spokane, 6 more with AA Hartford. And he's been really lights out all year. I think he's been one of the best pitching prospects in all of minor league baseball. It's a sub-3 ERA over 100 innings, 149 strikeouts, 40 walks. He looks much more like the player that we saw in 2022 and got excited about. And I think now you can make a case that he's one of the 2 or 3 best pitching prospects in all of baseball. So I think maybe the lesson here is, like, if you have legitimate minor questions about what's happened with a player and you think they're fixable, still be pretty excited about the talent. That's where I was at with Chase Dullinder. I know when he was drafted by the Rockies, a lot of people were kind of soured on the player pick pairing just because Colorado is tough to pitch in. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on Dullinder and his kind of progression over the last few years, what we've seen, if you have any like scouting takeaways from what he's shown so far?
Yeah. And I mean, credit to you. This was your guy coming into the 23 season, and you know, you stuck with him and he's flourished in Colorado. And I know, like you said, this was a pick that was, you know, people viewed it as almost, you know, it almost not a death sentence for Dullinder, but it was viewed, you know, in a not so great way, I think, by the general public. But, you know, credit to Chase and also the Rockies player development staff for, you know, making a lot of people eat a fat bowl of crow. Like, I mean, he looks the part of a potential guy who can headline a rotation and sooner rather than later. I mean, you want to talk about strikes and stuff, like the stuff across the board is at least probably half a grade up from what Lauder's doing. And I think the strike throwing ability, I think Lauder's going to beat by a hair, but I mean, he's right around the zone. The command is really impressive of all of his pitches. Mm-hmm. You could leave the yard, I think, on one day with 2 or 3 sixes on your scouting sheet with Dullinder. But I've been blown away, and I think with him and Quinn Matthews and Caden Dana, like, those are two of the more impressive pitchers in minor league baseball this year. And I think Dullinder is well on his way to a call up in relatively short order.
Yeah, and really, I mean, I was going to check back and see how many players maybe you would take or you wouldn't take in front of Dullinder now from 2023. But I really think like every player drafted in the top 10 from that class has been exciting, and none of them look like misses at this point. So I think it just speaks to the talent of that draft class. Even if maybe like even Blake Mitchell, who I'd say has been maybe the weakest of that top 10, like he's had a pretty good year, and I'm still pretty excited about Blake Mitchell. So I don't think you can argue with any of the picks in hindsight now too much. But the last one I want to mention too, and maybe this is me just being a little bit nitpicky with how this player's been talked about, because we do have him pretty juiced on our board still, and that's Dylan Cruz. He made his debut this week. We have him currently number 4 on our top 100 list, pretty similar to where he's been since he was added to that top 100 list after being drafted. I think my thing with Dylan Cruz is I'm still quite high on him, and I think a lot of people have cooled on either their expectations or their excitement level for him as a prospect just because his season has been fine. It's been unspectacular. It's been just okay for a guy with the sort of hype and expectations and draft pedigree that he comes with. But for me, I'm thinking, like, it wouldn't surprise me at all if Dylan Cruz just had a pretty quiet, normal 2024 pro season and then winds up being exactly the player we all expected, like a perennial all-star type who hits for average, hits for power, has speed, plays a good defense wherever he's at. Because, like, between AA and AAA, this year he's hit 270, 342, 451. He's homered 13 times. He's doubled 21 times. He's stolen 25 bags. I think if you have this sort of performance from a player who is basically a year out from being drafted and is not named Dylan Cruz, you're probably a lot more excited with what you're getting just in terms of on the surface production in the minor leagues. But because it's Dylan Cruz and it comes with these sky high expectations, I think a lot of people almost look at his season as being disappointing. And I'm still very high on Dylan Cruz. Like, just hearing how some of our guys on the Prospect Channel talk about Cruz, I find myself just being the highest in the office on Cruz. And again, this is definitely a personal bias for me. I think he's the best college position player that I've seen in person. The other would be Adley Rutschman. I really didn't see him that much outside of Team USA. So I don't know. I'm just still excited about Dylan Cruz, Peter. I want to give him some love. He already has, I think he doubled off Garrett Cole, was his first big league hit.
I thought I was going to leave. I thought I had a chance off the bat.
Yeah. Like I just still really want to basically pump up the expectations and hype for Dylan Cruz. Cause I think, like, what are the question marks with him that have been shown this year in the minors outside of just not having outrageous stats? I think from like a tools perspective and a skills perspective, he still checks all the boxes for me. So I'm still pretty excited about what he's going to do.
Yeah. And the best amateur hitter I've seen in person argument is a really interesting one, because I think I've been so spoiled on the Cape, and I think that's a fun debate too, not to open this whole separate can of worms, but Alec Bohm is up there. Mm-hmm. Nick Gonzalez is up there. Bazana's up there. And then looking at Omaha from 2023, I was fortunate enough to see obviously Lauer and Skeens and Ty Floyd and you know, Sean Sullivan and so many other guys. But for hitters there, you had Cruz, Wyatt Langford, Brock Wilkin, Kurtz. I'm going to leave a lot of guys out unintentionally. Like Kyle Teal was like unbelievable. But yeah, with Cruz, I think he's fallen a little bit of a victim to what happened with Dolander leading into the 2023 college season. Like, he was drawing comps to Jacob deGrom and Steven Strasburg, and these basically, you know, there were impossible expectations to kind of live up to. And yeah, I think that with Dylan Cruz, he had similar sky high expectations going into the 2023 college season. And he, I think, exceeded them, put up just a video game slash line of 426, 567, and then an OPS of 1.280. And then, you know, the rest is history, wins a national championship. But I think in pro ball, at least for me, in this year, and I think I want to cut him at least a little bit of slack, because they've really accelerated him. And, you know, double A for my money's worth is probably the most difficult level in professional baseball outside of the big leagues. I think for me, at least, the hit tool kind of being the one thing to lag a little bit behind has been the only, I think, aspect of his game I've been just a little disappointed in. But again, like, he's basically just a little bit more than a year removed of being drafted. So I'm with you where I think that he's going to be a guy that is going to come into his own at the big league level. And, you know, he has the tools, and he's flashed the tools in professional baseball to still be an impact big leaguer. I'm just curious to see where the hit tool ends up, you know, how far that's able to progress.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be interested too. I think some bit of prospect fatigue, and the fact that, like, his peer from the 23 class, Wyatt Langford, was so quickly pushed to the majors and had such a loud minor league debut, I think that maybe it put a little bit more of a shadow on Dylan Cruz than I would have wanted for him. But yeah, I think a lot of what you said rings home true for me. But yeah, that's kind of all I had on some maybe prospect philosophy talk, and just the shapes of careers, how that changes our perception of players and how we think about that. I think it's interesting. So hopefully you guys did as well listening. I wanted to close with a few players in the 2025 draft class to talk through. Peter, I do think there are going to be some interesting conversations on, like, which pitcher would you take in this class. There are a number of exciting pitchers at the very top this year that we didn't really have in the 2024 draft class. And you also got to put eyes on one of the more interesting and maybe polarizing hitters in the 25 class. So that's Ethan Petry on the hitting side. And then for me, one interesting player debate that I kind of had internally with myself after Team USA was Jamie Arnold, the left-handed pitcher at Florida State, versus Tyler Bremner, the right-handed pitcher at UC Santa Barbara, the two top-ranked college pitchers in the class. Curious just where you stand on those two, and thoughts on Ethan Petry, who puts up huge numbers but has had maybe some interesting feedback, and I would imagine he'd be more polarizing than some other players in the class.
Yeah, I guess starting with Petry, I'm just curious as to how high the bat is going to get him popped. You know, it's kind of crazy to think that, comparatively speaking to his true freshman year at South Carolina, in which he hit 376 with 23 home runs. He had a down, quote unquote, down year this year where he had 306 with 21 home runs. But then he follows it up by making mincemeat of Cape League pitching. He had 360 with a league leading 11 home runs, won the league's MVP and top pro prospect award. Typically they divvy it up, give one to one player in the, and one player the other award. I was a little surprised they didn't do it this year. There were a handful of really high quality prospects on the Cape, but nonetheless, really impressive what he was able to do. But how he does it is a little weird. But like it worked for him this summer, like the swing aesthetically, it's a little long. The hands will drop and drift. But again, he consistently made quality contact, was able to drive the baseball, the power more than plays with Wood. Where he played this summer is like notoriously the biggest launch pad in the league and perhaps in all of summer collegiate baseball, but hardly any of his home runs were real cheapies. And, mm-hmm. you know, the impact
Aaron Judge problem.
Yeah. The impact with him is really, you know, it's very, very real. Like he is not a metal bat merchant.
How common is it for Cape hitters to get to double digit homers? I see those numbers and kind of, I feel like I can't think of too many who have gotten to that.
Uncommon.
Yeah.
Really uncommon. Like if you get to double digits, you know, even if you end the summer with 6, 7, 8-ish home runs, like that's going to be widely viewed as a really productive summer from a power standpoint. Like Tanner Thatch, for example, who as this draft cycle progresses will be talked about as someone with, you know, some of the most raw power in the class. Same with Brandon Compton. Like they hit 8 home runs and 6 home runs respectively mm-hmm. throughout a full summer. And like that was considered, you know, productive from a power standpoint. And Petry and true freshman Ryder Helfrich actually were tied for the league lead with 11 this year. And I think last year Hunter Hines led it with 12 or 13, which was the most in a single season since 2012, which was very, very impressive. But with Petry, I'm curious because it like, you're going to have to be all in on the bat with him. Like positionally it's right, first base DH type. You can throw him out in the outfield in a pinch and he'd be fine, but he's not an everyday guy in the outfield. I think he probably fits best again as a right, first baseman DH. So you kind of look back to this year's draft and, you know, I'm just kind of curious to see how high he can go. I think mm-hmm. like a Tommy Whitish type range where ironically enough, like, similar positional concerns, you know, you're buying the offense and the hit power combo with White. And I think with White, the hit tool is a little ahead of Petry and Petry might have him beat just ever so slightly in raw power.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's going to be an interesting guy because the numbers that he's going to put up are going to be, I think, really, really impressive. So I think that again, as the cycle goes on, he'll be a pretty polarizing bat because some are going to be all in on him and rightfully so. And then others are going to kind of be not so much. I might lean towards the latter, which I know
I think sounds with these profiles, we tend to be a little more skeptical. I would say this kind of lines up with our thoughts on Jack Caglione as well. Just some of the questions that we have about hitters seem consistent across these profiles. And like, if you are in general more excited about those profiles, just like keep in mind that we probably tend to be more on the cautious side in general, just based on our conversations over the last few years. And I think like that's also been with Ben Badler. I think we all are generally a little bit reserved with players that have a lot of swing and miss in the amateur levels. So just something to note.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. So he'll be a fun guy to follow and debate as we go further and further into the cycle. And then with Bremner versus Arnold,
I'm curious
where you lie, because I think that this is going to be a really fascinating debate.
We'll just say real quickly right here, if you had to pick one today, who would you take? I would go Bremner.
I'd also go Bremner.
Okay. Yeah. I was about to say the fact that I had to line these guys up for USA's college national team and I went Bremner 1 and Arnold 2 maybe was a bit of a spoiler. But they were really tough to separate. I think in terms of like performance in college baseball, there are a lot of similarities. Both of them took really strong steps forward from their freshman year to their sophomore year, going from split starter reliever roles to full-time starter roles. It was a sub-3 ERA for them both. Bremner at UC Santa Barbara. He also actually, I thought he started more games than he did, but it was 9 starts, 19 appearances. Yeah, like they were very close on our college national team list. For me, it's like the bias that I have is like towards Bremner because the delivery is just much more aesthetically pleasing. Arnold has a unique unorthodox delivery, which could be a benefit, could be an advantage. Maybe it's tougher to pick it up out of the hand, but he's just unique enough and sidearm enough that I'm like, this is looking a bit odd to me for some reason, but he gets results. I think also like pitch by pitch and even with command, I might lean Bremner ever so slightly. But they're like, these are like differences on the margins, I would say at this point in terms of my confidence level. But I just think for most parts, I would lean towards Bremner.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty razor thin with Bremner at least, and I'm pretty bullish on him. Like, it's a really easy, smooth, and repeatable delivery. Like, he's playing catch in the mid-90s. Both his slider and changeup are plus pitches for me, and the slider has taken really positive strides even since last fall. I remember seeing some video of him in a scrimmage against Loyola Marymount, and he ripped off a couple of really quality sliders, and to see it continue to progress as the spring went on, I thought that was a really positive sign. Like, he's got three legit, at least for me, plus pitches. And you couple that with the fact that he's also an advanced strike thrower. He's going to headline the Santa Barbara rotation this spring. I think comparatively speaking, he's going to be a low mileage-ish arm. There's just a lot to like with him. And I think the cherry on top, and this is sort of a not super wild comp, but he has a little bit of like Quinn Matthews to him, and people are going to be like, what are you talking about from a makeup standpoint? Okay. You know, I'm fortunate to know Quinn really well, weird brag on my part, but like, he's like a very low, like he doesn't care in the best way possible. Like, he is a low heartbeat guy, goes on the mound, doesn't care who's in the other batter's box, is not so like hyper-focused and results-based. And Bremner is the same way. Just kind of like this California cool type of kid, just letting it all hang on the mound and going after guys and, you know, again, not getting pressed and, you know, out of whack. And I'm not saying Jamie Arnold isn't like that, but I know for a fact that Bremner is. And I think that plays in his favor now. Mm-hmm. It's going to really help him out in pro ball, you know, when it's a big time change of pace and a big adjustment. And I also think where he has a little bit of an edge on Arnold is, again, the premier left-hander in this year's draft class, Hagen Smith. Arnold, I think I'd love to see the progression of a third pitch develop, you know, particularly the changeup. But Hagen Smith so far, like, his changeup is ahead of Arnold's and was ahead of Arnold's at this point last year. Like, he was showing flashes of it, and Jamie has as well. But
yeah, and Hagen Smith still barely uses changeup in pro ball, so hey, maybe he doesn't really need it. But
yeah, I mean, he's still carving, so I mean, like, if it ain't broke, don't really fix it. But
the Spencer Strider solution,
yeah, he'll eventually flash and it'll be pretty good. But yeah, I lean Bremner right now, but it's going to be really fun to watch these guys every Friday night and internally wrestle with this for the next like 10 months. And then you also throw in, you know, you have Matt Scott at Stanford, who's another really impressive arm. Kyson Witherspoon at Oklahoma is a sleeper of mine to end up in this tier 1A of arms. Like, he's a guy, and he's going to be really good for Oklahoma on Friday nights. And rotation mate Cam Leiter joining Jamie Arnold, like, that's as dynamic a 1-2 punch I think you can find in college. You know, maybe Landon Beetlesheese and Zach Root at Arkansas. There are even just talking through this, the 25 class is going to be fun. There are a lot of guys that I really like.
Yeah, a little more exciting than 24 maybe at this stage.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm more juiced up about 25 as a whole right now than I am 24. Unfortunately, no one will be Bizana at the top, but I think depth wise, like, there are just like scrolling through the rankings we have. And as we continue to update the rankings through the fall and add more guys on here and talk through it, like,
I think the high school side, that's true as well. There are just a lot more players at the very top that I'm like legitimately excited about, instead of just like poo-pooing the draft class the entire time from the high school side. Like, on the hitting front, they're interesting pitchers. One thing I was going to ask you as we were talking about these two is, like, I think right now Bremner and Arnold are the top two college arms in the class. Like, maybe that'll change after some conversations in the next few weeks and months. But for now, that's kind of how I see it. And then I think Seth Hernandez is the clear top high school pitching prospect at this stage. How would you line those three up? Because I have like an intuitive 1-2-3 now. But I also understand I'm a bit of a psychopath when it comes to high school pitchers and just
I know, Sester, I know how you phrased it and how you've talked about him.
Yeah, you know my
Seth will be three. Seth will be one for you. So
yes,
if it's Hernandez one, Bremer two, Arnold three, and you know my biases as well. So, man, Seth's really, really good. Bremer would still be my one.
Okay.
And then I'm like wrestling with Hernandez versus Jamie Arnold. It's like prep right-hander. That profile scares me a little bit, but like Seth Hernandez is an anomaly, I think, or at least looking like it right now. I'd go like Jamie Arnold 2A.
It's fine to take the safe, boring college lefty over the dynamic high school lady, Peter. You're allowed to. It's your list.
Oh, it's like 2A and 2B. You know, I'll give the edge to Seth Hurt. Like, I mean, it's such a high octane.
Let me just bully you into the rankings that I prefer.
Yeah. No, but like the more I think about it, like it's so razor thin. Mm. Like I'll go Hernandez, but like Jamie Arnold is as close as like a number three as you can get. And like there's an argument to be made and a very valid one at that he's the number one guy and you can kind of order these arms in any which order. And now that like we're talking about it and thinking it through even more, like Kyson Witherspoon is a lot closer to this conversation than I think people realize at this point. Like he is very close to breaking down the door.
Interesting. All right. I might need some convincing on that one, but we'll probably have to save that for another podcast.
I got a whoa type of look at him this summer. Like
he does seem to have some like Roddy Brechtish where if you like see him locked in, it's like pretty wow factor.
Oh, he was as locked in as can be and it was like he looked like a first rounder. So I'm excited to dive deeper on him as we go along here.
Yeah, let's do it. All right, but that'll be it for today. Peter, anything you want to close the show with?
Yeah, I mean,
listeners too.
As is the case every week of every month of the year, like no matter what you're a fan of, can be found on baseballamerica.com and can even be listened to on the podcast channel. So I think the best way to stay updated is to subscribe to both. It is well worth it on whether you're a podcast guy or you like to read your material, a subscription is well worth it. And at least on my end, coming out tomorrow or it'll be out by the time you're listening to this since it's released on Friday, a fun little piece on college football x baseball crossover. So guys that are gearing up to play college football have already started playing. If you're DJ Uyunglele, who also have a little bit of baseball history, so DJU, Tywan Malone, Deuce Robinson, just a few of the guys that are talked about. And I think it'll be out to 10 or 12 guys when all is said and done. And then as we go along in the fall, tons of draft updates for 25 college, 25 prep, combined 25, same thing for 26s, the draft podcast. And then once you get into a rhythm like this, you know, the season's here before we know it. And it's also, you got the prospect handbook. So quiet time of year, yes, but a ton of fun stuff on the horizon.
Yeah. You summed it up pretty well. So I'll just thank you guys for listening. Thank you all for subscribing to BA. If you do, if you've been curious about it, Peter had a good pitch for you there. So definitely check it out. It was fun getting back on the show. We will talk to you guys next week. For Peter, I'm Carlos. So long, everybody.
You sit in traffic now, but later there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.